What's up, film fans, and welcome to another episode of What the Flick, the cast and the funniest blokeo riffs. I'm Matt. And this is... I fucked it again. This is the podcast where we rewrite Fast and Furious movies that we haven't seen based only on the poster.
No, it's part three.
Blokeo riffs.
We were fine till everyone started laughing.
And this time it's Fast and the Furious 4.
Correct.
And I think it's just called Fast and Furious. Which is fucked. Here we go.
What the flick? What the flick? We don't know what a movie is gonna tell you what we think it's about. With the help of the poster, we figure it out. What the flick? What the flick? Gonna write a film that already exists. We'll be doing it better because we're so cool and back to 2 years of film school. What the flick? What the flick? We're never gonna watch that shit. Got better writers than Steven Spielberg. Film directors are all dumb nerds. What the flick? What the flick? That's the name of the podcast. It's almost time, so make some noise. It's time for the poster boys. So what the flick?
And we have a guest, and the reason I panicked right before the intro is because I haven't established what we're going to call the guest.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, you can... Hey, look, call me by my real name.
Everyone, welcome to our guest.
See if you remember it.
Theodore Logan.
I don't know who that is.
I just made
you
the
just
name
made the
This
name
is
up.
Adam Goodall.
I was worried that you were describing a war criminal. You're just been going through, the list of, people who are responsible for the Vietnam War, and, that one will do.
Theodore Logan is Ted from Bill and Ted. That's his full name.
I mean, and if he's responsible for the Vietnam War, that's on him.
It's true.
Yeah. He did time travel, so who knows what.
You know what he did.
It's the butterfly effect, baby. You know, just speak to Socrates in one timeline, and
suddenly Henry Kissinger happens.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, the guest is Adam. Hello, Adam.
Hello. Hello, Mac. Hello, Matt. And thank you so much for inviting me on to this episode of Lab Bible's Extraordinary Lives. I'm really humbled that you would offer the space for me to talk about my life. I don't think of it as extraordinary, but perhaps this normalcy is the most extraordinary part of it. So thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, we just had one thing really wanted to arrow down on quick. So what was this podcast you used to do?
Hey, look, it's been a lovely stream. A lovely podcast. I had a great time. You guys have a lovely afternoon, lovely morning.
Oh, yeah, you try to fuck with me. Do you want to talk about it?
This is the first time I've stepped behind a mic to do a podcast since then. So
furiously deleting a folder labeled littlejames.exe.
I genuinely think the story is funny, and I think it's very clear that you did do anything wrong, and I think you should tell it.
Well, okay. So this is the first time that I've stepped behind a podcast mic since 2016. 2016, myself and a friend, Johnny, we were looking for a podcast to do. We were looking for a podcast idea because we've been wanting to do something for ages together. We were making theater together, but we weren't doing anything that was really into our wheelhouse, which is film. We were we could do one of those podcasts that people do where they go through an actor or an actress's back catalog and talk about
a classic idea.
You know, everyone does it. Yeah. You know, you've got Leguizamarama, you've got the whatever the one is for fucking Clint Eastwood films. Blank Check, all that stuff. So we were like, who are the actors that we really enjoy? Who are the actors whose presences we're great.
There's literally millions.
There are millions you can pick, and we wanted one who had what we thought was a really interesting career, ups and downs, highs and lows. Mm-hmm. You're charting the course of a life that hasn't reached the potential that you thought it would, also has a lot of interesting nooks and crannies, twists and turns. And we decided after going through a shortlist.
What twists and turns there would come to feud, come to fight?
Well, you know, some of them we expected. Some of them we did not. We started a podcast called The Spacey Space, which was a walk through the career of Kevin Spacey, Academy Award winning actor Kevin Spacey.
And here's the thing. You could still make that podcast. You just have to have a very different tone to it.
It's a true crime podcast at this point, right? It starts with he was one of the greatest actors in the world. He had the world at his feet. He could do whatever he wanted. And what he wanted
was very bad.
So we started that podcast and it was fun. You know, we had we got guests on from the Wellington comedy scene and it was really funny just to sit and watch a movie with them and then get behind the mic and talk about sort of what the film was like, what Kevin Spacey was like in it. We had some segments. I can't really remember them at this point. And now, towards the end, shortly before I left to come here to England, we were wrapping it up and we were we got into American Beauty and we were we don't really want to continue this. It's taking forever. He's got a big career.
It's really slowed down recently.
Yeah, weird how that works.
I would say that it's started speeding up again recently.
Oh, no.
I mean, he's really gotten into a new stride as a YouTuber, I think. And, you know, he makes some vlogs. You know, not a lot of people disagree on their quality. But
he was in two films last year.
He was. One of them.
I didn't know them.
was meant to premiere at the Prince Charles Cinema, and then some. But the promoter / director had not told the Prince Charles Cinema that Kevin Spacey was in it. And then when they found out that Kevin Spacey was in it, they had to release a statement that's "We're so sorry. They tried to sneak this in without telling us Kevin Spacey was in. We're not hosting this premiere anymore."
There's one here that I've just that's not out yet. I'm just on Kevin Spacey's IMDb now, and this is the top one. It's, you know, it's in production. Mm. And I just want to read you the synopsis of this, because I think putting Kevin Spacey as the star of this is maybe in poor taste.
Okay, so this is a Roman Polanski type thing, I guess, where Roman Polanski escapes America, heavy quotation marks on that, flees justice. And then spends the next 30 years making films about how he was unfairly indicted, and it's all a witch hunt.
Potentially, this is a film called Gore.
Okay,
where Kevin Spacey plays the lead character of Gore Vidal, and the synopsis is: a young man spends a summer in Italy where he meets his idol Gore Vidal, who teaches him about life, love, and politics.
No. Who's
and
making
I just
this?
Want to.
Who's responsible?
I just want to sort of dwell on the optics of casting a Kevin Spacey vehicle where he teaches a young man about love.
No, but this is it, right? This is it. He's now just making films that are I should be exonerated. They should leave me alone. Leave me alone. Yeah. This is the same arc that every fucking cancelled man in Hollywood, quote unquote cancelled man, goes through, where they just start making art.
Yeah, he's going to have a Netflix comedy special soon.
Exactly. It's like
Michael Hoffman is the director.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
I don't know who that is.
He's a storied English director. That makes sense that he would be
but it's about the artist. And, you know, I want to make sure that we recognize that he is a once in a generation talent kind of vibe.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, The end of the podcast. This is a key part of the story.
This is the best part
this
of the story.
This is the best part of the story. Is that we got to I was moving to England, and so we decided that we'd go out with a bang, because we're not going to get through the rest of his career. We were going to do a live recording of the podcast with a group of our friends who had been on the podcast before. And we were going to do that at the same time as a screening of the Kevin Spacey film. Really kind of, I think you could say, the start of the upturn. People say it's House of Cards, that 2010s upturn. But my argument is that it's Nine Lives.
And the film where he's a cat.
The film in which he is a cat for most of the runtime, yes. And so we screen Nine Lives, and there's a... We screen Nine Lives, and then there's a gap between the screening of Nine Lives, which we do in like a place called Thistle Hall, which is like a small like community hall in Wellington. And there's a gap between the screening and the recording of the podcast. And one of our friends, Matt, comes up to us. Hi, Matt, if you're out there. Matt comes up to us and is like, hey, you guys haven't seen the news today, have you? And we're like, no, why? And he's like, oh, no. He's like, have you seen Twitter today? And we're like, no. And he's like, well, there's some things being posted about Kevin Spacey. And I wanted to know if you'd see. And we're like, no. He hands us the phone, and it's like the first like messages about like, oh, something's crook about this guy, sort of like filtering through, and we're like, oh, okay.
He literally found out he was a big criminal
in the middle of the fucking
event. You were doing a live
in the middle of the fucking event. And now there's one of our friends, a friend of ours named Blythe, and her argument is that she told us right at the start. And I don't remember this. I feel like if this had happened, I should have given it more credence. But
I'm in front of a select committee going, I don't recall.
I don't recall. I don't know where I was. I don't know whether I supported the Springbok tours or not. That's a joke for the New Zealanders out there. So we recorded the episode, and by the end of the episode, it's all over the news. It's everywhere. And so it's a really, like we've done the episode, and now the room is just down buzzes. Everyone's finding out, like basically, like, going on their phones and just, like, whoosh, the feeds are full of it. So we...
And you're sitting there at the front being like, I thought it was actually quite a good piece.
Why Nine Lives is a good movie, and we're just like, well, okay. Within the week, we had like basically we had to like step back and be like, well, how are we approaching this? So within the week, we had uploaded the episode for a week, and with like a front loading the like, we think that Kevin's, we believe the accusations, we believe the men who are accusing him. You know, fuck Kevin Spacey, we're out after this. And then we deleted everything.
Yeah, just wiped
we
it.
We just wiped it from the internet.
As you would.
Yeah, yeah. You did the right thing, but it is just a funny story of the awkward timing of, like, to find out between showing the movie and doing the podcast is the most incredible piece of timing imaginable.
It is. And, like...
It genuinely feels like a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. Like, that's what it feels like. It's so... ridiculous.
There is a part
of the
story that we haven't told you, which is that shortly after me and Johnny got together and we're like, well, that was a shame, but we should try and do it again. And let me tell you, Kissinger Corner did not go off according to plan.
I really thought you were just going to go real blood.
Did you know what he'd done?
Charles Manson. Charles Manson Corner was not well received.
We were just like, I thought he wrote a couple of good books.
going through the filmography of Ronald Reagan, going, well, I'm sure that nothing's going to ruin this.
we're just out here like, so Lenny Riefenstahl.
Daggett, let me ask you a more pressing question.
Sorry, yeah. Before you do, I just want to get out ahead of Gore, because it turns out that although it's at the top of the filmography, it was actually abandoned. It's not being released, but also not made post allegations, post knowing about all of this shit, right?
Oh.
It was made beforehand. So in fact, what it is it's Kevin Spacey doing a Louis C.K.
So is this cusp of the second comeback then? This is like,
yeah.
He was going to do all the money in the world, and then this would have been his like...
The film was in the late stages of post-production, ready for release, when it was cancelled by Netflix after the allegations came out.
Yeah, this would have been his vault back into like Academy Award nominations and all that kind of thing.
I think this would have been his Oscar bait, yeah.
Oh my God.
Gore Vidal biopic.
That is so unhinged.
And I do also just want to point out one more thing from the Kevin Spacey IMDb, which, because I knew that he did like the Christmas messages as Frank Underwood, right? That he was doing that kind of like weird, kind of unhinged thing.
Yeah.
I thought that he was doing that on his own. What I didn't realize is that with an 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb, the 7-minute short film Being Frank with Tucker, Kevin Spacey's House of Cards, interviewed by Tucker Carlson.
Oh, he's
was what? A thing.
He's never. Have you? Did you see recently, yesterday, the Dennis Quaid interview with Tucker Carlson?
I did not. No. Oh God. Yeah.
Don't tell me Dennis is bad.
Dennis
is
down the pipeline. Dennis went down the far right pipeline. But this episode that just released, where Tucker interviews Dennis, is Dennis talking about basically how all infrastructure funding is theft because. And I'm being serious here. If there is a solar flare that knocks out all of the electricity grid, we're not going to know what to do.
What the fuck?
And so government shouldn't exist because we all need to learn how to be self-reliant in case of a solar flare.
All right, Tucker. All right, big mom.
It feels like Dennis has been Dennis has really been enjoying Deep Impact over and over again.
Is Dennis Quaid in 2012? Dennis Quaid's in 2012, yeah. Right? Like the end of the war, which is a film about
is he?
More
no, he's in Day After Tomorrow.
Is Dennis Quaid the one who released a sex tape of him and his wife while he was wearing like the mask of one of the presidents of the United? Am I inventing that?
Well, I'm definitely not Googling that now. So,
oh, don't worry.
No, that was his. That was his brother Randy.
That was Randy. I couldn't remember which one was like the.
It should have been obvious which one did it. One of them's called Randy.
Well, that's true.
Well, you say that, but the third result for Dennis Quaid's sex tape was an Entertainment Tonight article titled "Dennis Quaid Shares the Most Interesting Place He's Had Sex."
All right, let's all guess what it is before Diane opens it. I'm gonna say. On the counter of a five guys.
I'm gonna say inside the O of the Hollywood sign.
I'm gonna say you know, big actor. I'm gonna say it was on a grand piano during the filming of Great Balls of Fire.
Oh, this is exciting.
Okay, here we
go. Let's see who's closest.
In a new interview with UK Sunday Times, the 64-year-old actor gets candid about everything, from his past struggles with drugs to his former marriages to the most unusual place he's ever had sex. It was a slow elevator. It was in Quebec, he confesses. It must be the French influence.
A slow elevator? Fuck, that's very funny to imagine it. Imagine 10 minutes in the elevator, like, we've only gone up one floor. Well, you know, this time.
Here's the thing. So he says after that, like, it was the elevator going to my own apartment, so it wasn't like a public building. I knew the other floors were currently unoccupied and no one was coming in, but she didn't. Which is, a really fucked up way to frame
that. Yeah,
that
feels weird, huh?
She was scared the whole time. But also, I think that, an elevator in a private building, still not that slow.
No.
No, I think if he's finishing before that gets to the top, bad times for Dennis and partner.
Yeah, I think
well, I mean,
so.
I assume that like he's got the penthouse, right? Because he's a celebrity of sorts.
But what? That's like 3-4 minutes. If it's slow.
Yeah, so you might if it's like a slow elevator, you might get 4 minutes.
That's like
from when
that's
the doors
like,
close.
Yeah.
When I misheard, I thought you said he must have the pen hose, and I thought that was a weird way you're called his penis log. He's got a pen hose. It's like
he must have the one of the
famously.
That's one of the weirdest terms for a penis I've ever heard. He's got the old pen hose.
Dennis Quaid's got like a penis that, like, you know how in World War One when they had machine guns and they were just like. It's like a triangle of metal hot propping them up. That's what he needs in order to have
yeah. There's so much. He's got the precision. Yeah. There's so much precision that he can come through the blades of a fan as it's on.
They just like get him down to the firing range and like, Dennis, you're going to sit up? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Just like unzips his pants, gets it.
Pulls down like a sniper rifle, like balancing sticks.
The thing is that he has to load it manually each time. So he needs to grab his balls and just like go.
Daniel Squid and his wife.
It's front-loading like a musket. He has to get other cum and just did, with a little pipette. Like.
He's got like one of those like ammo belts, but it's just like little test tubes full of cum.
Yeah, it's a bandolier full of jism. Him and his wife were trying, and she would mash, but like, Dennis, I'm ovulating. He would turn to his friends and be like, gentlemen, excuse me a second. He would just go to the window, prop his penis up, and just aim it with a sniper scope. She was sitting in the bedroom.
She's sitting in the lift, legs open.
Weirdly, during his military service, they called him Quick Draw. Not for that reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dago, I'm actually Adam. Apologies. Anyway, it's Adam, fine. What do you know?
I do
about
also
Fast
have a
Furious.
Twitch channel. Sorry, I do also have a Twitch channel, but and that's a different name. And that's going to be like a recurring issue with both of these people.
Yeah.
Famously, first time I met Mac, I say famously as if we mean anything in this world. Mac, when I first met Mac, I was like, please, in person, call me Adam. I don't like being called my Twitch handle in public because it feels kind of like it's like a skin that doesn't feel good outside of like the performance that is the Twitch stream. Not a single time that day did Matt call me my real name.
But every time I called you, Doug, and I went, sorry.
Yeah.
I knew every time I did it, I realized I'd done it wrong.
Said it,
but I just never called beforehand.
I think what's interesting is that I don't have a problem with calling, you know, people that I've met online, which is quite a few of my friends. I don't have a problem with calling them by their real names if I can, like, in the room. But if it's through a computer, then it's almost like a reflex.
And why do you think that is, Matt?
I think it's because, unlike Mac, I try not to dox people when I can.
Yeah, I think it's funny to dox, actually.
Mac loves it.
I'm going to dox the king right now. Buckingham Palace, London.
So you don't know that. You can't see this right now on the podcast, everyone, but Mac has got the phone out and has dialed the armed response unit. And he's saying all of this into the phone right now.
Yeah. Actively swatting our podcast guests. Actively we're doing swatting the episode. The king. Would be a very funny bit.
I do have Adam's address. I could swat him right now.
You could, and I'd welcome it. Please. I'm too long
Adam
for this
Adam loves
world.
The police.
I was at the Free Palestine March yesterday in London, the National Day of Action. And
sorry, just very quickly, other protests are available. Just have to.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not the BBC.
It was just a little joke, man. I'm not thinking that we're going to get sued by other protests.
Sued by like the IDF.
Your main Zionist backer is like going to call you up as soon as this goes live. It's like, what the fuck?
Sorry, Adam, please carry on.
So I was at the Free Palestine March yesterday, and I was there. I got there, I think, about halfway through and got to Whitehall towards the end, like around about 4:30. And as I was walking down Whitehall, what I witnessed, my first instance of cops just rabble-rousing for no good fucking reason and trying to fight protesters. And I tell you what.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen.
You know that it happens. You know that it happens. But you don't realize how pathetic it is until you see it in person. And there's just like this really tall, built cop with like a buzz cut and a little wet baseball cap on and thinly cropped beard who's
just waving
his hands like fucking like a slap fight. And it's but like,
because he knows he can't throw a fist. He can't throw a fist or he gets
Yeah,
trouble.
You don't need to fight the protesters. But also, if you're going to fight them, do better.
Cops just windmilling their arms going, I'm just going to walk forward. And if any of you get hit, that's not my fault.
When I went to the Palestine protest about a month ago in my town, there was a very funny part where at the start the police had kind of come around and been like, hey, look, we're not going to stop you doing anything, but obviously, like, if it starts getting too rowdy or like, you know, you're causing other people distress, we'll have to step in kind of thing. And everyone was like, yeah, whatever, like, yeah, well, kind of whatever. And there's this older gentleman speaking at the end who his parents were from Palestine originally, but he'd lived in Britain his whole life, and he was genuinely really moving speaker, like really, really moving guy, talking about how, you know, like obviously how painful this is for him, but how he's like, you know, like, this is like not just about Palestine, etc. Like, this is the kind of thing where, like, you know, we have to stomp this kind of thing out so it doesn't happen other generations as well. It's just like, you know, like, this is a time to set a tone, etc. And he started doing this bit towards the end where everything he was saying, he would stop and people would cheer. Mm-hmm. Do you mean like he would say something and people would be like, yeah. But it was really, really good. Like, and it, but then at one point towards the end, he went, thank you all for coming here today. We're all making a powerful statement to everyone. Yeah. And he went, Stoke-on-Trent will be a city that supports the downtrodden. Everyone, yeah, anyone. And thank you to the police for being so supportive today. And everyone kind of went, yeah. Because it would be rude, dude. But you could tell everyone was like, oh, man.
You lost.
You were so close to a clean sweep there.
You lost him, man.
You were so close to a clean sweep. And then he turned around and clapped the police. And everyone kind of were like, all right, he's been very nice. I'm not gonna let the old man stand there and clap on his
head. It's such a thing with older people where they're just like, you know, that kind of relationship with the cops, I will never understand it. After you've seen them just like huddle in a corner around someone they want to arrest for like 10 minutes. And then all give up because people are surrounding them and they're like, well, we don't want to try and pull this person through this group of people. Because they're just going to yell at us and they're going to be mean.
Yeah. Adam, I have a question
for
you.
Yes, Mac, what is your question?
What's your relationship to the Fast and Furious, to La Familia, and to Dominic Toretto?
Ah, La Familia. I remember it well. And by remember it well, I mean I remember the start and the end. I've seen the first Fast and the Furious a couple of times. And I remember, so I saw Fast and the Furious when I was the Fast and the Furious when I realized now I'm going to have to be very specific about my language because of the way that these movies are named. I saw the Fast and the Furious when I was a teenager. I saw Too Fast, Too Furious when I was a teenager. I then rewatched the first three again, I think, in university. And so in university, I was, this is a bit of a digression, but in university, I was a member of an online forum for Empire Magazine, the UK film.
Oh,
the UK film magazine.
Fancy boy.
That forum is now defunct. Empire shut it down. But I was a mod there for a time, which was a really bad thing for, you know, a 19-year-old with his first taste of power. just like the most pathetic little worm you could imagine.
Air Cub includes Daggett on Empire movie form.
Honestly, that's exactly it. One of the members, one of the most rabble rousing members of that forum now is recently got a New Yorker profile for his food newsletter. He's the editor. Exciting. He's the editor of Vittles, and what I remember him for is photoshopping my face onto a picture of Patrick Stewart. Saying with the caption, "Who the fuck is Adam Goodall?" there was at one point we had a forum competition which didn't have any kind of like material gain attached to it, but it was just a write an academic essay on a predetermined subject about a predetermined film. It was basically like a dice roll kind of thing. It's a fun little experience, and I got the Fast and the Furious. And I got the Russian collectivism and perestroika in the 1950s. And I wrote a 1,500-word essay on how Fast and the Furious could be read as a one-to-one metaphor for the Soviet Union's like process of perestroika and collectivism.
Jesus Christ.
I don't have that essay anymore, and I do not remember it.
Can I just say, Adam, that is maybe the most Adam Goodall thing I've ever heard in my
life. Right.
Keen-eared listeners may be realizing is that Adam is the first guest we've ever had on this podcast who actually knows anything about films.
That's right. I am the film expert, and anything that is said here, I'm going to run it through IMDb, and then I'm going to yell at Mac and Matt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm keeping them honest. So, yeah, so I've seen that was when I saw Tokyo Drift and was a real, like, kind of like, I guess you would say, like, you know how there are films that sort of like gain currency over time amongst like certain like film Twitter type people where they're like, actually, this film that was much maligned is really, really good. And it's like some kind of poptimism bullshit. And sometimes it's not true. But sometimes, like with Tokyo Drift, there's something there. And there is something there with Tokyo Drift. Even if it's just the Teriyaki Boys Tokyo Drift song. Truly one of the greatest songs ever put down.
Oh, that's interesting, because whenever we did Tokyo Drift, the final song was Basketball by Little Bow Wow.
Yes!
Was it, or was it, did it end up being a Steve Aoki remix of Perfect by Ed Sheeran?
Oh, yeah, no, that was it, yes. It was Steve Aoki's Perfect by Ed Sheeran.
That's, right. That's very fucking good.
I forgot Ed Sheeran was an R2K.
Yeah, so Ed Sheeran's part of La Familia now, as okay, is cool. Lil Bow Wow.
I will take that. I mean, Lil Bow Wow, you know, he's a classic member of that crew.
Just very, very quickly, should we give Adam a very brief previously?
The canon.
So the cast and the funniest Blokio riffs is our...
such a stupid name.
Is our version
very rude.
Of The Fast and the Furious in every movie we're trying to go on from the last one. So oh, yeah. Tokyo Drift, because Shane fucked us on Too Fast, Too Furious, Tokyo Drift was a Wild West epic set in Japan during Wild West times, but also there's cowboys there, where Ken Watanabe plays an evil mayor who thinks that all rappers and singer-songwriters are witches.
Amazing.
So La Familia have to go around and save all of the rappers and singer-songwriters in their cars and then do a perfect circular drift, which opens a portal back into modern-day Tokyo.
So this is feudal Japan Footloose.
Yeah, pretty much.
Amazing. Mm.
So La Familia so far is Dom Toretto, Brian brackets Paul Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, who also is a very important plot point, is a big skier.
Big skier. Yeah.
He teaches orphans how to ski in his spare time.
Aww.
We've got Letty, who is Dom Toretto's...
Dom's girlfriend.
Michelle Rodriguez,
Mia, who is Brian's partner.
Yes.
And then we have alt-universe Tom Toretto, played by Tyrese Gibson, whose name is Tom Dorito.
Tom Dorito.
Yeah, because in the second film, as we all know, Brian woke up one day to find out that Dom Toretto had gone back in time and altered the timeline, which is why his has a second La Familia, which is Tom Dorito and Eva Mendes and Devon Aoki, and that's when he meets Ludacris, who is a planeswalker. Ludacris exists over all timelines.
What I love about this, and I'm holding a pen, I just want to note that I'm just holding the pen for effect. I'm not taking any notes, and if stuff wrong, that is on you. What I love about this is that in the actual series, it takes... What series? There's no real series. It's just this series. In the actual series, it takes like 7 films to get to this level of absolute horseshit. And you've just gone straight there. And I appreciate the efficiency.
Devon Aoki and Eva Mendes play Yubi Dorito and Cindy... Posterling,
yes.
Well, it's a good thing then, looking at the poster for Fast and Furious. Tell me if I'm going too fast or too furious about this. looking at this, it seems like we're very much back to basics.
It's poster time.
Now, I will say, though, in this poster... the car does appear to be shooting lasers.
See, I read that differently. And I'm wondering if, and please just like, correct me, like intervene if you think this is going too far.
Uh-huh.
But what that looks, if you look at it closely, it looks kind of like a lava plume in the background. So I'm wondering.
And if you look very, very closely, you can see that in the front, it's Pierce Brosnan in a comfy cardigan.
we love Pierce Brosnan. I've still not seen Volcano.
Which for eagle-eyed viewers is a Dante's Peak reference.
Dante's Peak?
Not a Volcano reference.
Volcano's the Tommy Lee Jones one that came out the same year.
Hey, do you remember earlier on you said Adam's our only guest who's anything about movies? False. He's a big fuckhead like the rest of us.
I can't believe this. You've outed me. I've spent a decade and a half cultivating an ear And you've just taken that in.
Is there any idea how much Kevin Spacey shit I had to watch to convince
people? How many cardigans I had to buy?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's got elbow patches on it. Elbow patches.
This is a nice cardigan. This is a nice cardigan.
It is. Yeah, I said when you joined the call, you look very nice today.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I'm going to a classical performance.
Oh, are you? What are you going to see?
I'm seeing Randall Goosby. He's an American violinist.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, with his quartet. So that's going to be nice. Anyway. So I think, and I'm wondering, because like, it looks like a lava plume. It looks a little bit like the ground has opened up.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering if like, this is a situation where, you know, they've transported back to Tokyo and they've gone back to Los Angeles. But because of their time traveling antics, what they've done is caused a,
they've caused a rift tremors. Of some sort.
Yeah, they've caused tremors in space-time that have impacted...
We've caused a Tokyo rift, they say. Looking directly into stuff. Camera.
That's good. That's good. So maybe this takes place immediately after they get back from feudal Tokyo.
Hold on. Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
What if this film, right, because it's just called Fast and Furious... Mm. What if this is like Back to the Future 2, where this film
they've come back
Fast and Furious 1, and they have to make sure everything happens exactly the same, but unfortunately, there's also a big earthquake happening that they've caused a tremor.
Yes, yes. So like, they can't be doing it to get, Brian can't go to Brian. Brian can't be helping Brian.
Well, that's what Ludacris says, right? Ludacris is like, Brian can't go to Brian because otherwise the you know, it's going to, the multiverse will implode and everybody will die. So we've got to do it secretly.
So Dom and Mia have to run interference on Brian, and Brian and Letty have to do that with Dom. And so they're just like, you know, they're constantly playing.
And in the meantime,
like,
they're doing the first film, which as everybody remembers was about stealing DVD players. And at one point Brian goes, this feels pretty low stakes considering that we've now traveled through time.
And now there's a volcano in Los Angeles that is tearing up the, there are earthquakes.
Yeah. But what it is because maybe because of like, I don't know, time travel has like a sense of dramatic irony. Mm. It's like there's a car, an evil volcano car that's chasing them around, and that's the thing causing the earthquakes.
I did just want to stop there because I just want to get into the mechanics of evil volcano car. Now, Matt, like, what is the modifier here? Is it a car that is shaped like a volcano, or is it an evil volcano who is driving a car?
I think it's this car. Right, that is on the poster. And maybe driving it is Ludacris's evil brother or something.
I'm really having to memory hole some of my knowledge of the later Fast and the Furious films now.
Wait, hold on. What if we just pick another rapper who could have been this? What if the evil car is Ja Rule?
The most evil of rappers.
Correct. No. Who you want is Exhibit. Because all Exhibit is about is pimping rides.
Oh, of course.
Fuck, he pimped this ride, yeah.
So if evil Exhibit is all about de-pimping the rides. So he just wants to scrap him.
Oh, because this would be good, right? Because I was going to say before, I really like the fact that in all the films that we've had Ludacris in, which I think has actually only been one, he's been like a real chilled out guy because he doesn't exist in the timeline, right? So he's like, it doesn't really affect him. He's just like eating Doritos and like kind of telling people what to do. And this would be the first time he has to have a bit of actual agency because he's like, oh no, this is like an evil planeswalker. He'll kill everyone if I don't help interfere.
Yeah. Exactly. He's just creating earthquakes wherever he goes.
Also important to note, in our Fast and Furious 1, one of Brian's orphans got killed. Right? And that means in this film, that has to happen again. So there will be a point where Brian has to accept the fact that the child has to die for all of that familia to get together. Oh, and I think that would be a good emotional port to have to deal with.
He could intervene and he knows that he has to stay back.
Yeah, if he intervenes, he knows he'll lose la familia.
But also he can't be seen by other Brian at any point because otherwise the timeline will implode.
Yeah.
I think it was just at some point, because we've already said Dom and Mia are going to look after Bran, and Bran and Letty are going to look after Dom, we have to have a point where during it, Bran realizes the day and time, and he's like, I could save him, and he drives off. That's what the problem is, you know? That's the bit where the plans start to fall apart, because Bran's like, I could save little...
And here's the thing. Memory holder stuff. Yeah. I'm about to talk about the real Fast Five and the real Fast Ten. Memory holder, so that you don't bring it in. But in the real Fast Five, you know, it revolves around the heist of a safe from a Brazilian bank. Yeah. And then at the start of Fast Ten, it reframes it so that you know, so that you discover that, like, the big bad in Fast Ten is the son of the guy who ran the bank in Fast Five.
It was him, and James, the architect of all your pain.
Exactly. And I'm wondering if this is the thing where, like, what Brian discovers from seeing this from a different angle is that this was a ploy, like, the orphan's death was a ploy by the evil Planeswalker exhibit to get the two Brians together to try and implode the timeline.
Fuck, that's
he's
good
just
shit.
Like, he's just like, I've gotten dead to rights. I know that he'll try and save the kid.
What if we do a thing where Bran realizes shortly into the kid was, like, very, very sick anyway, and he's like, well, I'm probably good he died.
No, because
then Bran will be like, well, I don't need to save him because he's going to die anyway.
Oh, no. But the dramatic face that is the guilt.
That La Familia exist in a moral grey area as heroes enough that we probably don't need them to justify.
Mm. Mac, have you ever seen Sophie's Choice?
Yeah, but I don't think Paul Walker has the range to pull off a Sophie's
That's
Choice.
Where you're fucking wrong. That's where you're fucking wrong. Paul Walker, go watch Running Scared. Go watch Running Scared. Paul Walker, great in it.
I'm just not going to do it because everything I've seen Paul Walker in, including that Tyrannosaurus film, has not been good.
Paul Walker in Running Scared, he's like a fidgety little guy who's like caught up in a drug deal gone bad.
Caught up in a Sophie's Choice gone bad.
And by all accounts, incredibly good.
He's caught up in a Sophie's Choice gone bad. Is a very funny term. This Sophie's Choice is really taking a turn for the worse.
You know how usually Sophie's Choices are really, really easy. It's just like, yeah, I have my favorite child. Really... I have my favorite child. Yeah.
Listen, we all got, everybody's got the kid that they're going to Sophie's Choice.
Exactly.
I used to be like quite blunt about this thing quite a lot, where I'm like, everyone always bullshits about how about who they're like, oh, I don't have a favorite. I'm like, yeah, fuck, everyone's got a fucking favorite. They all know what they do, and it does my head, and no one admits it. And then now my family have two dogs, and I'm like, oh no, that's all it took. I'm like, oh no, not the two dogs. How could I possibly?
We know Rosa Parks is your favorite.
Oh yeah, I'd fucking boot Doris off a hill to see if it was.
It's not even a contest.
It's a real shame though that that you are the third in that mix. So if it was you and the two dogs, fuck, you're not getting pulled up.
Oh no, if it's between me and the two dogs, Mom's gonna kill me before she even knows what the rules are. Still, I've mentioned this before. It's my all-time favorite joke is Joel Dusher being asked, how long into Groundhog Day would you consider killing yourself? And he says 20 minutes before I knew what was going on.
Hey, look, you've got to have confidence in life. You've got to have confidence or you're not going to get anywhere. Matt, you said good Sophie's Choice, and you just like unlocked a door in my mind palace. Have either of you seen the film The Good Son?
No.
So do you know about the film The Good Son?
No.
So I saw.
Is that the one about the doctor?
No. I'm a doctor. I'm good. The Good Son is a movie that came out not too long after Sophie's Choice. I think like 3 or 4 years. So like the inception point kind of, it makes sense to me. But I saw it when, spoiler alert, I went to boarding school for a couple of years.
Hey, we've all been there.
No, we haven't. Explicitly, that's what many of the problems in the world are based on, especially in this fucking country.
So let's just drill down on that for a second. What you're saying is that many of the problems in this country stem from the fact that not everybody has been to boarding school.
I would say that...
If we send everybody to boarding school...
If we send everybody... You know, it's like Syndrome in The Incredibles. If everyone goes to boarding school, then no one's gone to boarding school.
If everybody's a Tory, no one will be.
But we watched this. We watched this in boarding school, which is like I was like 11 at that point. Not a good film for an 11-year-old to see. But it's about a husband and wife adopt their I think brother or sister-in-law, a family member's child after like he is orphaned.
Is this the Macaulay Culkin Elijah Wood?
That is exactly it. So Elijah Wood is the son in the existing. Elijah Wood is the son in the existing family. Macaulay Culkin is the kid who gets adopted after becoming an orphan, and Elijah Wood discovers that the Macaulay Culkin kid is a psychopath, and is determined to kill.
Can I just very briefly interject and say how I saw this film? Because I think it's very funny before you finish.
I think it's incredibly funny that you did not know what this film was until...
No, I saw it because my mom and dad went to the Extravision near our house to rent a movie and saw a picture of Macaulay Culkin in a very snowy background and thought it was a Christmas children's film and brought it home. And when they gave me the tape, I was like, why is the tagline for this movie "Evil has many faces"?
This is apparently like... That scared the fuck out of kids because like parents were just getting it without thinking.
Correct. Yeah, it looks genuine, like a family Christmas.
It does, but like, yeah, it's just like Macaulay Culkin being the awfulest little shit you can imagine, and it ends with a Sophie's Choice with Elijah.
And a very
Wood
easy and one because you just killed the evil one.
That's exactly it. Elijah Wood and Macaulay Culkin are hanging from a cliff, and Elijah Wood's mum has to decide like both whether to save Elijah Wood, which she does immediately, and then whether to save the Macaulay Culkin kid. And it's just like, you wouldn't save the Macaulay Culkin kid.
I can really imagine the idea of it just cutting to like the dad's POV and him being like, oh my God, which of the children? And as he's doing the voiceover of which children, you just see the mum walk past him and just pick and then start stomping Macaulay Culkin's fingers off the branch, be like, get off, fucking rotten little evil
I'm
kid.
I'm trying to remember if that's how it actually, if like the stomping is how it actually ends. I don't think it does.
I don't think I finished it. I think genuinely my parents were like, you can't watch this, and took it off.
Oh, that's
me.
A shame.
Do you ever think about how Macaulay Culkin looks like the Squirtle to Steve Buscemi's Wartortle?
Oh, all the time.
He does a bit, actually, yeah.
All the time. Like, you know, every day. Well, who is the Blastoise?
Well, that's what I was just trying to think about.
And I know who it is. It's Peter Lorre.
It's who?
Peter Lorre.
I don't think I know.
Hugh Laurie.
Peter Lorre, or Peter, how do you pronounce the last name? Peter Lorre. He's, have you seen The Maltese Falcon or Casablanca?
I'm about to look. I can see it.
Oh,
yeah.
Little bug eyes.
That guy's got a big wide head on.
He does. Phenomenal actor. Great performer.
He looks like, if you in some of these pictures, what it looks like is that at some point in life, he and Haley Joel Osment Freaky Friday'd, but only the face.
Just very quickly, I looked up the ending to The Good Son, and what happens is Elijah Wood is slipping down the hill and Macaulay Culkin has a perfectly good grip and the mum picks up Elijah Wood, and then it just says, and then Macaulay Culkin's body is washed out to sea.
I'm like, fucking Superman kicks.
Macaulay Culkin the Wikipedia plot says Macaulay Culkin has a very good grip and Elijah Wood's slipping, so the mom picks Elijah Wood up and then clearly just does not choose to go back from Macaulay.
She just like looks down the cliff and is just like, perish, child.
Then the very last bit is apparently Elijah Wood. The closing monologue thing is Elijah Wood wondering if his mom would save him again. And I'm like, I reckon she probably would save you over the evil child.
You're not the bad son. You know, you're the good son. You're the titular good son.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Movie. If you tomorrow, Daggett and Adam and Matthew, walk down a hill, went for a lovely beachside walk, and you saw Elijah Woods and Macaulay Culkin tumbling over a cliff and both handling onto the edge, and you could only save one of them. Who are you
now,
saving?
Is this the character from the movie, or is this the...
No, this is the actor's current day.
Elijah Wood. No hesitation.
I reckon...
Is that bad?
I reckon
is that bad?
What do we know of them?
Just what you know of them currently. Like, it happens to you. Like, say it happens to you today, right after this podcast.
It's the trolley. What you're doing is you're trolley probleming me.
Yeah.
Essentially, you just get to. I'm just asking you which one of them you would prefer didn't die.
Being honest, frankly, if you have to hesitate doing the trolley problem, that's on you. You are making a mistake.
That's a skill issue.
It's a skill issue. I just pull it so it kills one person. Like, how is that hard?
Yeah.
I think if I saw both of them, I'd just be like, God, I'd be so powerful if I killed two of everyone's most favourite actors.
Is Macaulay Culkin one of people's most favourite actors?
Macaulay Culkin's did some cook shit, man.
Yeah, he's got, I don't know, I think he's probably one of those people that's like, there probably is some people who'd say he's a favourite actor, but who don't actually watch films. Do you
know
what
I mean? If we let Elijah Wood fall off the cliff, we don't get the greasy strangler.
Well, no. Now, hold on. Macaulay Culkin
fall off the cliff. We don't get the Pizza Underground, the band where he covers the Velvet Underground songs but makes them about pizza.
Now, hold on. What you're suggesting is that if we let Elijah Wood die tomorrow, then that's going to retroactively wipe him from the timeline.
Yeah, I think it's the time cliff.
the time cliff. Fucking Death Stranding.
That's a good movie. That's a good movie, The Time Cliff.
Oh, my God.
A cliff that if you fall off, it erases you from history.
In that case, I'm just like sending an email to God. I completely forgot the leaders of the political parties in this country at the moment. Sending letters to Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer, being like, "Hey, there's going to be there's going to be an opening of a anti-immigration office down by the Time Cliff. Do you want to come to the Time Cliff?"
I actually could have my full villain origin story then. If I'm at the Time Cliff and Elijah Wood's hanging over, I'm like, fine. no more people to make fun of me for not liking Lord.
You're like fully death nutting here. Like, they'll never. Yeah. And there's like,
but
this,
then what actually happens is just Lord of the Rings is made, but with like fucking out with Macaulay Culkin as Frodo.
Just imagining now, like, a fucking like citizen journalist, like, discovering that some put. Like, being the only person who remembers that people have gone missing from the Time Cliff, and like,
oh my God, Elijah Wood.
And just
kill the Elijah Wood, become the Elijah Wood.
And then Ed Sheeran comes in and is like, hey, I really loved you in Lord of the Rings.
Ed Sheeran comes in having just done his cameo in Game of Thrones, and you pull out Lord of the Rings, and he's like, oh, I guess Lord of the Rings is better than my cameo in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and then I go at the end to visit the guy who plays Samwise Gamgee, would you call him Sean Astin? Is that his name?
Yeah.
He's just not become an actor at all for some reason.
And can we just point out Sean Astin currently starring in an Angel Productions feature?
Sean Astin has been doing like faith-based work for about a decade.
Oh, really? This is the first I'm hearing of it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say that his career has gone downhill so much as I would say his instincts are bad.
Yeah.
Sean Astin was bad in decisions. Stranger Things like 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, but that's because he was in the Goonies. Like, you know, that Stranger Things, this whole vibe is that we're going to cast people that you remember because it gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling when you see them. And that's why Stranger Things is awful.
Anyway,
because it sets out to make people happy, and I hate that.
I don't think you've seen the new season of Stranger Things. I don't think you'd say that.
Yeah, no, I've only seen the first season.
I think you know that's not the case.
Also, didn't they just drop an actor for having, like, said something vaguely positive about Palestine?
That makes sense. While they've got, like, one of their kids going around being like, Zionism is sexy all around New York. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Uncool. Yeah. Anyway, gang, we've done this twice in a row now, in that we've got 5 minutes left and we haven't written a movie.
we've written a movie. Let's recap. It's really a really simple movie. They come La Familia come back from Tokyo and go back to Los Angeles. But having opened that time space route.
Oh no, sorry, Daggett. Sorry, Adam. It's in Portland, Oregon.
It's in Portland. Wait, what?
Yeah. The Fast and the Furious is set in Portland.
Okay, sure. Look, hey, I bow my head to the canon, you know? I love the canon. I love it when I'm constrained by a series of rules that were set by creatives many years ago.
Yeah.
So they go back to Portland, Oregon, but because of the time rift that they opened to get back from Tokyo, from feudal Japan, they have caused tremors that set off a series of earthquakes and volcanoes that are caused by the evil Planeswalker Exhibit, who's out to destroy all their cars.
I think what's happened is when they've come through the portal, they've somehow released Exhibit, and he's now just launching volcanoes everywhere as a sign of his power that he's finally free.
I love that.
Nice. Maybe this is what happens. It's like the cold open is that they go through the portal, and then you see them like whizzing, almost whizzing through space and time, right? Kind of like Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And as they're doing that, you see like a mirror floating past with Exhibit in it, like Superman style, like Zod, and they break the mirror on the way past and Exhibit gets out. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to pimp so many rides, but with evil.
That's D-Pimp. He's the bad plane walker.
But all the shattered bits of glass reform into a car around him. I think that'll be a cool shot. And then he looks over, winks at them, and then he speeds past
them.
That's
good.
And maybe it knocks them off course, and that's why they land a few days early. That's
why they land early in Fast and the Furious 1.
And so they have to reenact the actions from the first film, but without interfering with their own selves. Brian has to basically come in after.
Exhibit is trying to stop them, right? Exhibit is trying to stop the first movie from happening. Yes. So that La Familia never existed. And then they have to thwart Exhibit while not being spotted by their own versions of themselves.
Exactly. They have to both thwart Exhibit and make sure that, like, the DVDs get DVD players get stolen.
Yeah, and the ski center for orphans stays open.
Yes. And then at one point, Exhibit realizes that the key to destroy Brian and destroy La Familia is to recreate the situation where one of the orphans dies.
Yeah.
Because he knows that Brian is too good a man to not try and intervene a second time.
Mm.
And so he steals one of the orphans and takes him to the tallest volcano in Portland, Oregon, and is like, I am going to throw this child into the volcano.
Nice. And
wait, hold on, sorry. But what if it's actually this, but the opposite, where he's like, he knows if the child doesn't die, La Familia won't form, so Brad has to kill the kid.
Wait, hang on. This is maybe a little bit of synergy here that we've made accidentally, right? So in the first movie, the thing about it was that they were stealing the DVD players for altruistic reasons because they were badly made DVD players that exploded if you tried to play three DVDs in them, right? On the third movie
Remember the halcyon days where you could put three CDs into a CD player
third movie that you watch, it explodes on, right? And the evil capitalist Tony Shopping knows about this, but he doesn't care.
Why? You've kept Tony Shopping from me this whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's done.
So what happens is that Exhibit kidnaps the orphan, and he also steals the DVD players from La Familia, and he takes them all up to like a volcano. So he takes them all up to Yellowstone Park, and he's like got a fucking truckload of DVD players and the orphan, and they're hanging over the super volcano. And he's like, I'm going to dump these DVD players in, and the explosion of the like 5,000 DVD players is going to set off a super volcano and also kill this orphan. What are you going to do about it, Brian?
Yeah, that's good. That's
almost
good.
Almost a kind of Sophie's Choice.
Almost a Sophie's Choice.
Yeah.
I think that's good because you could have
Will
more
you save
film happen
the orphan or the entire continental United States.
but I think that's good because you could have that bit where they make sure the rest of the film happens, right? They're like, oh, we've done it. It was so easy. All we have to do now is make sure the DVD players get stolen. And that's whenever they go and they are slowly like stalking the other two of them and being like, where's the fucking truck? And that's when Exhibit comes across like some sort of like screen on the TV and be like, ha ha ha, La Familia. Thought it would be so
more
easy.
More like Laugh Familia, because you guys are a bunch of jokes.
Yes.
And that's when Ludacris just appears in the car and using his magic powers and is like, I know where he is, follow me. And he just enters the sat nav with his brain.
And then at the end, Ludacris and Exhibit have to have a wizard battle.
I see. I was thinking, how do they defeat Exhibit? And I think that having Ludacris do it through CGI battle is, you know, it's the most unsatisfying thing about modern blockbusters is how they divulge into like.
I think Ludacris loses the wizard battle, right? But then La Familia have to defeat him through the power of being family.
Of the power of cars.
And also driving really fast.
Driving really fast, absolutely. Because I am sick to death of third acts that devolve into like battles between two CGI characters. They are always weightless. They are always awful. So let's get that done quickly. Ludacris knocked out immediately. Just does not have the power to defeat the Planeswalker, but the power of La Familia.
I think what would be really good is if, using the skills that they learned from Tokyo Drift, everyone starts drifting around the edge of the volcano's rim, keeping the lava inside, but that kind of forms a kind of battle arena for Paul Walker, Dom Toretto, and Exhibit to have a fist
fight. That's very good.
And because the lava's there, it's stopping Exhibit accessing his planeswalking powers. He can't get out of the energy sphere caused by the lava.
Yeah, you know the bit in Lord of the Rings where Legolas like runs up a staircase that's like breaking up and he's jumping from like falling. Imagine doing that, but with like a big car. He's just doing six
jumps.
Can I jump in
and like suggest something? Because if there's one thing that I am confident is going to happen in the rest of these podcasts, and it happens in Fast and the Furious as well, it's that Mia never gets the time to shine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what if Mia comes in and flattens the evil planeswalker with her car, and then she's like, we could have just done this all the whole time, dudes.
That's what I was going to say. Adam, I think it would be perfect, right, if those three are having a fight. So it's Brian, Exhibit, and Dom are all fighting, right? And Exhibit has just smashed Bran, or like he's like kicked Bran across the big platform they're in. Turn around, he has Dom by the throat, and he's like, you know, threatening, being like, you think you could kill me? He's like, I've existed for millennia, motherfucker. He's like, I was here before cars even existed. And then Arno, he's like, oh, he says something, you know, like the Buffy the Vampire bit, where he's like, no mortal weapon could kill me. And then
Buffy gets the rocket launcher.
Yeah. But I like the idea, Dom's just like, well, when you first came around, there wasn't cars, you're right, but there is now. And then Mia just plows through the lava in the skyline and just like minces him. And you just see his body just like fucking split everywhere.
But not like gory, like in the same way that like the car formed around him at the start, it shatters into a million pieces and they all melt. They all melt in the lava.
Very nice. Into a million tiny exhibits that all melt in the lava.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because it's all glass, just melts into the lava. Mm. And then Bran is able to grab the orphan, throw him into the back of the car, but he only has time to grab onto the spoiler. So the final shot is Mia driving Dom and the orphan out of a volcano while Bran's holding on at the back like Superman as the car comes down.
That's so good.
Nice. And can I pitch one thing? Because obviously we need to add to La Familia in this film. The orphan is played by Jason Statham.
Great, amazing. Yep.
All right, I agree with that, but only if he turns around and says, you've changed, Brian, and leaves, because Jason Statham has a very exciting entrance later on in the film, and I'd like him to be able to make that entrance.
Also, really important to note that you don't necessarily need to add to La Familia, because like one of the things about La Familia is that all of their enemies eventually become familiar. Mm-hmm. So
that's the thing that we've not really explored yet in these movies.
the power of family is too much, and people get drawn into the family. The moment you come into orbit, you're just like pulled in like a funny, like cataclysmic event.
What if the orphan is just like a normal kid, but he's just like, anyway, bro, I'm off. I'm going back to London,
That's it.
And then that could be the implication later, that when he comes back and stays, but it's just a normal kid for now.
And then, of course, it ends with a cookout, right? It's got to end with a cookout. Yeah.
Sure. They're all grilling up. They're drinking some tasty Coronas with the labels facing outwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's it. We've got the film.
And what? Hold on, but whose song's at the end? Because it has to be one of the rappers from the film.
Okay. God, I don't even know.
Oh, and it's Exhibit. It's just, what's Exhibit's one song? It's just X.
I don't know Exhibit's songs.
I think Exhibit's one famous song is literally just called X.
Exhibit songs. Yeah, X.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's literally...
It's the first single from his third album, Restless.
I'm just putting it on now so that I can, like...
You can know. You get the vibe.
Oh, yes. Yep. That's it. Yep. Mm-hmm. X. X.
X. Yeah.
Yeah. Except it's not X. It's Fast. Fast. Yeah.
Do. Furious. Perfect. A perfect movie.
You know, like, it's going to be really hard for
Whoever's coming in next to beat that, I think.
I think so.
Well, the thing is, the next person does have a little bonus gift because they get to be the person that introduces The Rock.
They do. That's true.
Is The Rock on the poster? Oh.
I think if The Rock's in a movie, he's on the poster, right?
I bet that's
in his fucking contract.
Yeah. Well, do you guys know about the Fast and the Furious contract
stuff? Of course we do.
Another exciting actor that appears in Fast 5, and I'm sure we'll all be very excited to hear it, is Gal Gadot.
Oh, thank God. I was wondering when she'd arrive.
Great. So if you really enjoyed the Zionism content in this podcast, you're going to have a blast next time.
You're in for a treat.
Lock it in, everyone.
Oh, my God. It's just giving me like a fucking gallstone.
A gallstone? Anyway, Adam, where can everyone find you? Please pitch all your things in your newsletter, etc.
Thank you so much. So I stream online at twitch.tv/DaggettVevo. That is DaggettVevo. So I stream there like 2 to 3 times a week, just like goofy shit, like games and goofy nonsense. I have a newsletter that I started last week called Post Electric, which is a newsletter on Button Down about theater and culture in the age of the for-profit blackout. I need to get better at saying that because it's a little bit of a tongue twister. But it's essentially a newsletter looking at like the ways that culture speaks to the world today, speaks to our crumbling economies and heating up world and all of that fun stuff. So that's me.
How exciting.
And Mac, where can our listeners find you?
Here on this podcast. Matt?
You can't find me. I'm hiding inside a shoe and I won't tell you which one. But if you do, I might grant a wish.
I'm fucking running down to the fucking shoe store now.
Just two very quick things. Have I told either of you about the fact that my hometown of Northern Ireland has a shop called has a shop called The Shoe Zone where people keep stealing the S off it.
What?
Oh, so yeah, it says Ho-Zone.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
Also, just very quick, an idea I think about all the time is non-magical genie, which Matt made me think of there, which is just a genie you make a wish to, they just have to figure out a way of dealing with it.
It's a fucking MacGyver genie.
I wish to be a millionaire, and he's like, fucking right, well, wait here, I guess. I'll be back in 4 years.
just like it's really, really into shorting stocks.
He's like, I just have to figure it out. I don't know what else to do. I'll do your second wish once I get the million, I guess, back in a bit.
And the second wish is like, I wish to be 20 again. He's like, fuck, okay. Like,
yeah. I wish for world peace. And he's like, maybe. Anyway, well, that's it. I'm going to do the outro.
Go for it.
It's a good day to be a bad boy, but it's a great day to be a poster boy and, of course, a member of La Familia.
Hell yeah. We did it.
Without you, my friend.
We're getting close to that actual song being in the film.
I know. You're getting close to him fucking dying IRL.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's great that the main sort of big tease of this miniseries is that we're getting closer and closer to an actual tragedy. Yeah.
Truly, truly. I mean,
hey, everybody, in 3 episodes, a man dies.
Two actual tragedies.
In real life.
You've got a man dying, and then you've got The Rock and Vin Diesel falling out.
Oh, God. The real tragedy of The Fast and the Furious.
It's always sad when two bald brothers can't see eye to eye.
It's true.
But it's also because they're both shot at different angles to make them both look taller, depending who's the main character. That's why they can't see eye to eye.
They keep punching wildly over each other's heads because the camera angles are so fucked up.
So
you can't tell how tall anyone is.
Yeah. And Tyrese is there.
I think
also Tyrese.
Oh God,
Gibson's
we didn't
there.
Even put Tyrese in this one. That's fine.
He's in it a lot.
Listen, there's too many characters. He's just in the background making a sandwich.
And we did say this is back to basics. We're back to basics with this one.
Also importantly, Han is in this, and it's not mentioned that he died the last film, but he is in it.
He was there. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I gotta go. I'm dying for a shit. I gotta leave. Come on.
first day of the rest of my life. Stand behind the mic like Walter Cronkite. Y'all keep the spotlight, I'm keeping my rhymes tight. Lose sight of what you believe and call it a night. This ain't the lightweight cake mix that you're used to. Territory you just can't shoot through. You gon' shoot who? Not even on your best day. Rolling the Wild West way, giving it up, leaving the whole world stuck, not giving a f***. Late in the cut, now we break through in the rut. Come on, Hennessy and orange juice, baby, fill up a cut. Quick to grab by the squeeze. Loosen up, let your hair down and join the festivities. Overcrowd the house like lockdown facilities. Be quick to give me while I push the rain. Going up and down my like the stock exchange. X. Rearrange the whole game with my rugged sound. X. Won't even say your own name when I come around. X. Stay on top but remain from the underground. X. To the Z and we all in the family. X. Rearrange the whole game with my rugged sound. X. Won't even say your own name.